You are listening to Vibes with Viv on WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. And today, we are going to be talking with Tashia Green-Williams, Deputy Director of Action for Equity, and Ashe Brooks Cook, Co-Director of the Green Equity Partnership. This is going to be a very informative program about a great initiative that's happening out of Action for Equity. We'll be right back. Looking forward to this exciting conversation that we're about to hear.
Okay.
And welcome back to Vibes with Viv on WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. And again, we're going to be talking with Tashia Green-Williams and Ashe Brooks Cook. Please introduce yourselves.
Hello, and thank you for having us. Tashia Green-Williams here.
And Ashe Brooks Cook.
And tell us a little bit about Action for Equity.
So Action for Equity is a coalition of community-based organizations. And actually, the work started back in 2002 when we were called Action for Regional Equity. And this was a coalition of policy advocates and grassroots organizations with the help of an organization called Policy Link. The organizations worked to create a region with an equitable approach to new development. By balancing the burdens and the benefits of growth across jurisdictions so that people in all income levels, racial groups, and capabilities can access opportunities within the region and contribute to its progress. So what that means is Action really has a focus on racial equity. We look at all of our work through an racial equity lens. Our areas of work are transit justice, housing justice, and jobs equity. Action was formed from this coalition back in 2018 with the merger of Action for Regional Equity and On the Move for Transportation Justice. So again, the coalition focuses on housing, transportation, jobs, and the social determinant of health through a racial equity lens.
And you say a coalition, so could you share possibly some of your partners?
So the members of our coalition are, oh my goodness, you put me on the spot. Let me think this through. We have CLF. We have Heritage Circle, which is a Native organization. We have La Comunidad, which is a Latinx organization out of Everett. Who else is a part of our coalition?
So this isn't just Boston-based?
No, it's not. So our work is regional. The groups within our organization are regional and national.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And can you tell us, where are you actually located?
We're actually located in four corners of Dorchester. So right on Washington Street in Dorchester.
And have you always been there?
So yes, the previous location was 367 Washington Street, and we are now at 420 Washington Street. So yes, we've always been within the community.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So can you share some of the initiatives, some of the projects that Action for Equity has had?
Sure. So one of the ones that first popped into my head is in the jobs work. So Action played a key role in the job standards for the casino. So when they were building, before it was Encore, it was just going to be a casino. And folks in the community were not necessarily completely happy with that. And so when the decision was made that the casino was going to be there, folks in the community really advocated to make sure that those jobs went to residents. So the work that Action did, a part of a coalition of groups out of Everett and the surrounding areas, was really led to about 90% of the jobs and wages and benefits going to BIPOC residents.
Wow.
And so the the work that they did also led to the expansion of who could actually work at Encore. So in the gaming, when it first was introduced in Massachusetts, there were folks that said, you know, no one with quarries, you know, people with criminal records could work in gaming. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't access those jobs opportunities. What we know is that when folks who have been involved with the court system mm-hmm. are able to get good jobs, they tend to not reoffend. Mm-hmm. And so we really pushed to open that the gaming allowed for folks with quarries to actually get jobs at the casino. So we petitioned the Gaming Commission and actually changed the law. And so now there are specific jobs within gaming that folks can with quarries can actually access.
Wow.
And so through that work, Action can say that we successfully got about 800 residents, predominantly people of color, into the good jobs at Encore. So that's one of the big things that pop out for me and would be more familiar for folks. One of the other things on the transportation side was the building of the Fairmont Corridor line and actually making sure that that line had stops in the community. Mm-hmm. So initially when the line was introduced, which it has existed, it went through the community, but it didn't stop there. Mm-hmm. And so part of the work and the transportation work was actually making sure that the Fairmont line actually stopped within the communities and allowed residents to have access to the seaport as well as the other end of the line.
Wow, these are really fantastic things that I'm familiar with, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to be familiar with, but not knowing that some of the success or the success of these things had to be, were connected with Action for Equity. Fantastic. And I personally remember with Encore, them having, I don't know if they were info sessions or initial interviews, but in the community at RCC. I remember that specifically. I remember the word getting out and lots of people. I personally, I know I'm a transportation for a number of family members and friends, and I remember taking people for info sessions there, and personally also know some people that actually gained employment from that establishment. This is awesome. Action for Equity does some pretty cool stuff. And we in the community need to know that more. We need to hear that name because of all the fantastic work that you guys are doing. Now, can you share a little bit about the Green Equity Partnership?
Sure. I will start us off and then I'm going to pass it to Ashe.
Okay.
How the Green Equity Partnership started, I guess I'll give that story. So Mass Clean Energy Center is our actual funder on this project. And they do the leading clean energy sector funding for the state of Massachusetts. We went into a proposal with a couple of our coalition partners, and we were funded $1.2 million over 3 years to train BIPOC residents who are already in the building industry, meaning trades and outside of the trades, to do retrofitting for clean energy to larger buildings and smaller buildings throughout the city and state. And I'll pass it to Ashe to talk more about that.
Okay. So, yes. So, the GEP is a program with two tracks working on decarbonization. So one is a heat pump installation and maintenance for trainees to experienced workers. And then the other is a decarbonization auditing for HERS trainer through the Green Project Lead. And so what that means is that we are going to be teaching two curriculums, one doing the HERS Rater training, which is the home energy rating system, and then the other being the heat pump and HVAC installation track. And hopefully we will, during this program, provide or allow individuals to be able to get their refrigerant technician license with the heat pump installation track. And then through the HERS Rater, a step up would be a green project lead, which would be able to allow individuals to go into sort of buildings and be able to tell or express the importance of sort of the green decarbonization and have that expertise to do that. And so during these trainings, we really want to emphasize sort of five learning modes. And one of those are sort of the deep foundation skills, which are really important in knowing sort of what you're doing. The other thing is the structured on-the-job training. The next thing is the online technical training and certifications and hands-on technical training that will be included in the classroom training with a technical instructor. And the last thing would be the best practices to support Black and BIPOC workers. Tishia?
And so our main focus was really so we know right now at least Action for Equity and our coalition partners know that right now there is a push to decarbonize, to save the planet, to go green in different ways. And we know that BIPOC communities, which they call EJ communities, which are environmental justice communities, are the most impacted by environmental harms. And so our thought was, if all of this money is going to come into the community to fix these things, then the community should get that work and be able to do the fixing and create some equity within this. And so our main point was to go out and reach out to contractors who were in the neighborhoods, who are already doing work around building. Maybe they're doing affordable housing. Maybe they're subcontracted in some type of way from one of the big GCs and want to expand their business or grow this their business into this decarbonization field. And so when we thought about that, it's really about how do folks get the deep skills to do this work? Where does that happen at? And so because that doesn't necessarily exist outside of the trade unions, we thought it would be a great thing for the community to actually build that out.
Now, when you say contractors in the neighborhood, are we talking the Boston neighborhood, greater Boston?
Greater Boston neighborhoods.
Greater Boston neighborhoods. Okay, so I had heard about this possibility, and then I heard about you receiving the grant. And I know of some people personally, but they're not in the what would be considered the greater Boston. I'm not exactly sure what the greater Boston neighborhood is. Why don't I just ask that question? When you say greater Boston neighborhood, what communities are we talking about?
Where greater Boston includes as far as Brockton, Braintree.
Okay.
Everything that surrounds the Boston area.
Okay.
I wouldn't say, and the reason why I use the term Greater Boston is because I don't have relationships in Western Mass.
Okay.
And so I don't want to say the whole state, but our organization's relationships expand across the Greater Boston area. And so that's why we use the term Greater Boston, because that's who we mainly represent.
Right now.
Currently.
Right now. Okay. Sounds great. And also, I just wanted to say kudos. If you guys submitted a proposal that to me that suggests, and please correct me if I'm mistaken, that others submitted proposals.
Oh, yes.
But you guys got the grant.
Yes, we did.
Awesome.
And, yes. And it is very exciting. Like, this is an exciting opportunity. It's exciting for the community. I think that, you know, a lot of times our community is looked at as a deficit.
Yes.
And that we need help and we need all of these support services and, mm-hmm. you know, soft skills is the term that they use. But there are a lot of people with deep skills who've been doing a lot of work in the community and don't have the technical training behind it and the certifications that go along with it. And so where do people actually get that at? And most of the time you have to get it on your own.
For sure. For sure. Again, I am talking with Ashay. And Taisha?
Tashia.
I'm sorry, dear. Tashia. They're both from Action for Equity, and we're talking about the Green Equity Partnership. We're going to be right back after taking this short break. You guys...
Did you know you can listen to WBCA from anywhere in the world? You can stream us online at WBCAradio.org from your computer or smartphone to hear the latest in local music and news every day from 6 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Did you know you can listen to WBCA from anywhere in the world? To stream local news and music from your computer or smartphone, just go to www.wbcaradio.org.
You're listening to WBCALP, 102.9 FM, Boston, Boston's community radio station.
And welcome back to Vibes with Viv on WBCALP, 102.9 FM, Boston, Boston's community radio station. And we're going to continue our conversations here with Ashe Brooks Cook and Tashia Green Williams. So we had talked a little bit about this this Green Equity Partnership. Now, where are you right now in this process?
So where we are in the process is we're still recruiting employer partners. Because this is an incumbent worker training, it means it's in training for workers who are already employed. And so we are still recruiting employers into the program who want to see their workers upskilled.
Okay. And how hopefully this is also going to get the word out to possible employers, but how else are you trying to get the word out to people?
So we have posted, we really were looking to move this in a word of mouth way mm-hmm. through our relationships. This is a beginning pilot. This is our first time mm-hmm. as the community leading something like this. And so we were really looking for people who had a deep commitment to their workers, who wanted to expand into decarbonization. And also this big piece that Ashe mentioned that we really didn't talk about was the best practices for BIPOC workers. And the importance of that and the commitment to that is the main point of this. So as industries change, and specifically predominantly white industries change, we have to think about how is it that BIPOC people go into these workplaces. And not just that they get a job there, but that there's inclusion, and that when micro and macro aggressions happen, that there's a system in place that the employer supports them in dealing with it. And so the reason that we wanted to focus on contractors in the community and people we know through relationships is because we want to have that deep commitment to the workers. Because just like when tech started to boom during the Summers Uprising of 2020, a lot of BIPOC people moved into the tech industry and they quickly moved out. Because even though the intention was there to create access, there wasn't an intentionality to create inclusion. And inclusion looks a lot different than access.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I totally agree with that. And also, it seems as if for some, if you allow access and you do not have systems in place, the correct systems in place, or open to systems evolving, which is possible.
Or transforming,
that's an easy way for one to say, see, I tried.
Absolutely.
And it didn't work.
Absolutely.
And it didn't work because, and the because can be whatever, anything. It could be anything. So I see where that is very important. Very important. This is a pilot, correct?
Yes.
And how long is this?
So it's a three-year. we are in year one, we're in year one, looking to start classes end of March.
Oh, just next month?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Very exciting. That's why this whole opportunity here with you is like a huge blessing for us to actually put this out and to let the community know what we're doing, not just to recruit employers, but we want folks in the community to know that, you know, like folks in the community are thinking about this. Mm-hmm. We have a stake in this, and that any public subsidies should be creating equity. And so if our city and our state are getting subsidies to make us greener, if employers are getting subsidies to make us greener, if landlords are getting subsidies to make us greener, then there should be equity in that. And one of the easiest ways to create equity is to give people a well-paying job with family-sustaining wages.
For sure. I totally agree. Now, is the city of Boston involved with this?
No.
Okay.
But they did give us a support letter when we did our application.
Okay. They're not part of, let's just say, your coalition.
No.
Correct. But are they involved at all in trying to get the word out?
I'm sure that there are individuals within the city that we have relationships with that are putting the information out.
Okay.
But I can't say that we have went specifically to the city and said, spread the word.
Okay. Okay. For sure. Now, these classes, where are these classes going to be held?
So it's a combination, and I'll pass that to Ashay to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have a combination of hands-on training that will be at our site. Uh-huh. And we'll have an instructor who will do that. Hopefully, it'll be once a week, most likely in the evenings, maybe a 4 to 5 hour class. And then that'll be along with online instruction. And so we have different lessons and modules that individuals can take online, and then they will go over those lessons with the instructor in the classroom. And so most likely it'll be over the period of 5 to 6 months. And during that time, we will also have on-the-job training where they'll be working within the work sites, either with their employer, or we might have to find other employers that might be willing to let some of our trainees do the on-the-job lessons there.
Now, these are not the employers. These are the employees. Is that correct?
Combination. We have some employers in the community who are quite small. Mm-hmm. And because the laws and regulations around, say, for instance, coolant is changing, mm-hmm. they also need to upskill.
True.
To stay with the market. So we're not limiting it just to employees. If there is an employer who wants to upskill himself or move more into decarbonization that has been working in construction in some type of way, or HVAC, mm-hmm. or pipe fitting, electrician, you know, there's different things. If they wanted to upskill themselves in this decarbonization, we're taking them on also.
So if I understand this correctly, there are going to be classes on site. Four to five hour classes, probably in the evening. So that allows other people to work, mm-hmm. you know, working people, as well as online instruction. Mm-hmm. This will be happening at the same time. This will be going on about 5 to 6 months, correct?
Yep.
And in addition to these classes, there'll be on the job trainings.
Yes.
At work sites. So the on-the-job trainings would probably be during the day, correct? Or would they be in the evenings as well?
We are trying to figure that out. I think it's going to be dependent on the employer. So some employers are currently doing this work. Mm-hmm. And so there may be an opportunity for their employee who's in training to get the skill, or, you know, behind someone else who's already doing it in the workplace. Mm-hmm. For folks who aren't in the industry, we are looking to partner, and I've been in conversations with others about partnering on projects where we can do that on the job training. And some of them may happen on the evenings, and some of them might be on a Saturday.
Okay.
You know, we're trying to figure that out. This is a customizable program.
Ah.
And so we are customizing it, some of the components, to the employer, depending on where they are in this industry, if they aren't in the industry. And so that is going to take some figuring out with them on how we do that piece. But it is a crucial component because you can do all the online test taking and all that. But if you haven't actually touched the equipment and seen how it works and how it feels, then, you know, you're not going to get that connection to it. And it makes it a lot harder to pass some of these more technical tests because, yeah, something the book says it looks like this, but in my mind, there's no correlation. We all learn different.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And also, it's very, what I find to hear that's so positive is that it seems like there's a lot of flexibility as to how to make this work.
Absolutely. And that's the point for it being a pilot. We want to get this right. And so the point of focusing on incumbent workers, meaning people who are already working for an employer, they already have that relationship. Mm-hmm. This employer decided I'm making a commitment to my staff to deepen their skills. Whereas in pre-employment, it's really about you having everything before you even get to the employer. And then the employer deciding. And so thinking of this and model in a different way and piloting and testing to see what works.
Now, with the possible new partners that you might have, employers, so to speak, that your students would be getting this on-the-job training, would these students, would they be getting paid?
So we do have funding
okay.
for that. Mm-hmm. For wage replacement.
Okay. That could be important for some people. This sounds really exciting.
It is. It is. I know we're over here like being really professional about this, but this is like a great thing. Like it's an amazing opportunity. And it's been a pleasure working on and trying to figure out. So my background, just to give you a little history on me. So I'm born and raised here in Boston. I live in Dorchester. And my background is actually in union organizing and policy and strategy, a very labor-based background. And I've been in community organizing for probably the last decade or so, but never on this workforce development piece. And how do people connect to jobs? And so coming into this work at Action, I really came in it with let's talk about how people connect to jobs. And it was really like, oh, it's about relationships. Like people get jobs through people they know. So if you want to see people in other industries, you have to build that relationships and people need to have the deep skills. In the city of Boston, there are 300,000 jobs that pay over $70,000 a year in a city that is 55% BIPOC. But those jobs are about 80 or 85% white. And so you wonder, well, who has all the good jobs and why don't folks in the community who have been here have them? And what we were told is, you know, like, oh, we don't know those people. And so, or they don't have the skills. And so it was like, all right, let's test this. Mm-hmm. Let's see if people get the deep skills and build the relationships. Are you really about being inclusive? And so this is a model we're testing. We're not saying it's perfect. We're not saying it's guaranteed to work. But what we can guarantee is people will end this program with deep skills in decarbonization.
Wow, this is truly exciting. We're going to go on another quick break. Again, we're having a conversation here with Tashia Green-Williams and Ashe Brooks Cook. We'll be right back.
Listening to WBCALP 102.9 FM, Boston. Boston's community radio station.
This is a Black History Minute brought to you by BNN and WBCALP, honoring the contributions of prominent Black figures to the society. Otis Boykin, inventor. Otis Boykin holds 27 patents. The most notable is the electronic control device for guided missiles, IBM computers, and the pacemaker. For more on Black excellence, be sure to visit our website at bnnmedia.org and tune in to WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station.
Did you know you can listen to WBCA from anywhere in the world? To stream local news and music from your computer or smartphone, just go to www.wbcaradio.org.
Welcome back to Vibes with Viv on WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. And you're here talking with, we're here talking with Tashia Green Williams, who is the Deputy Director of Action for Equity, and Ashe Brooke Cooks, who's the co-director of the Green Equity Partnership. So we were just talking a little bit about their training program that's going to be happening, going to get started around the end of March, and also, you know, all what was involved with that. And also, it was a really interesting point that you had shared about the, I believe, the about 300,000 jobs paying over maybe 75K?
70,000.
70,000. Here in Boston, and with the majority of those jobs not going to people in our community.
Absolutely.
People in our community. That says a lot. That says a lot. And how the jobs, these jobs are jobs that require specific skills, and skills that many people in our community have. But a lot of these jobs, as well as jobs in general, often come to be because of relationships that one has. Definitely, definitely. I remember personally many, many, many years ago, someone shared with me that when one is looking for a job, you need to tell everybody. Not just those that are possibly connected in whatever area that you are job hunting in, not necessarily those that you consider, the professional people, the professional contacts that you have, but everybody, because you never know who knows something, who knows who, or who might hear something.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, we talk with our friends. And sometimes we just talk with first-time acquaintances about possibilities, job possibilities, openings that might be, just in casual conversation. And you just don't know who might overhear that, whether they were directly in the conversation or not, but who might overhear that. And remember, you know, oh, well, I know someone who, you know, is looking for something, or I know someone who has that skill, or I know someone who might be interested. So this is really... This work that you're doing, this work that this Green Equity Partnership is all about, is going to bring such positive impact. Will make such positive impact in our community here. This is so exciting.
Well, can I speak a little bit?
Please.
So I was thinking about. So I just took this position. I started in January. Mm-hmm. And as I was interviewing with Tashia and some of the other staff, I was thinking about some of the reasons why I took this position. And just hearing you talk about the community and the impact that this position, this program will have in the community is, for me, I think it's huge. Mm-hmm. And as Tashi was saying, this is a program that hasn't really been done. And as, you know, I'm from Roxbury, I'm a native Roxburyan, born and raised, I grew up here. And I find that there are a lot of problems here in the city, and one of the biggest ones is poverty. And I was looking up some stats. So yesterday I was thinking about what could I say or how could I add to this conversation? And I started looking up stats and looking up sort of the percentage of the demographics of Roxbury, which is where I'm from. And, you know, it's majority Black and Latino, 95% Black and Latino. And then when you think about the percentage of people in Roxbury that are impoverished, it's 13%. And to give some context, the poverty line in the whole country is 14.6%. And the poverty line in Massachusetts is 11.1%. So we are sort of, the city of Roxbury is sort of in line with the poverty rates within the whole country. And
wow.
You know, you talk about sort of what the amount of income that a family needs, a household needs to thrive and to sort of flourish. And I was looking at the percentage of families that make, you know, 75,000 or more. And it's only 6.1% of families in Roxbury that make $75,000 or more. 6%. And, you know, 64% of families make under $50,000
wow.
a year in Roxbury. And so there's a need for programs like this to be able to provide the training, the skills to really help for inclusion and for really help for equitable living, you know, and that's kind of all we're asking for is for people to make a fair wage, to make a living wage, so they won't have to be supportive of, you know, all these other services, to be independent and do things on their own. And I think that, you know, for me, like, my family has struggled here in Roxbury and has built a legacy for themselves in their own right. And I think every family deserves, you know, that right and ability to be able to do that. And so, you know, that was a big decision into why I wanted to take on this job and see if I could actually make it work and help to build up the lives of individuals who might have the skills, who, you know, are working full time, who are trying. And a lot of these people have sort of these transferable skills that they even know that they have, but are not utilizing them. So how do we utilize these skills? How do we put these, you know, transferable skills from one place that may be our low wage jobs to another place where they're really making money and changing, making a difference in their lives and their families. Yeah.
And to piggyback off what Ashay said, you know, in our state, and I think in the country now, you got to make over $150,000 to just be
middle class.
and that sounds yeah. crazy because, you know, growing up, you somebody said $100,000, you'd be like, "Oh, that's so much money." Mm-hmm. But now it's like, no. And we have a housing crisis. And how do we plan on preventing displacement if people can't afford to live?
Mm-hmm.
And so where are we building up the programs that allow, like Ashay said, for people with the skills already in other industries to transfer into these higher paying industries and to, you know, make family sustaining wages and bring some equity back into the community? Because when the people in the community have good jobs, guess where they spend that money at? In the community.
In the community. Mm-hmm. In yeah. the community. That's for sure. When you were talking about the skills, the transferable skills, it just brought to mind, I also am a Boston, Roxbury uh-huh. resident, born and raised, and My children, my family, my children also born and raised here in Roxbury. But it just brought to mind that there are so many, I personally know of so many men, young men and more senior men who are the, I don't know, they're the construction guys, they're the plumber guys, they're the, you know, something's going wrong with your house. That's who you contact. And these are brothers in the community. These are not
Absolutely.
People who you find, well, they don't have the yellow pages anymore, but that ages me a little bit, but that you would go on the internet and Google plumbers. No, these are guys that maybe, you know, your brother might know, or you might know personally, but the other guys that you might know,
Absolutely.
Neighbors, know that they can do the work, and they do the work well.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps they just never, I don't know, never gotten to a formal company to do this work. But mm-hmm. they're electricians, they're plumbers, they can do construction. And this type of thing, this type of opportunity, this green equity partnership would, for especially the younger ones, would give them the credentials.
Absolutely.
You know, that they could use so that they wouldn't just be getting paid, you know, from the neighbors, the people in the street, but they'd be, you know, be part of a larger company, and they could be making, you know, livable wages for themselves.
And then themselves, they are a company. And I think that's one of the things that mm-hmm. we tend to allow for people to define who we are in our community.
Mm-hmm.
They are a company. They're out here doing the work.
They
got business. They know what they're doing, been doing it for years, but on paper, they don't exist.
Yes.
Or they're not procuring contracts from the city and the state, so they're not a real business. No, these are real businesses, but we have laws that dictate that you need certain certifications,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and people don't know where to get them.
They don't.
And so why not move that out the way? Why not close one of the gaps?
Mm-hmm.
Why not build a bridge for folks? And like you said, everyone shares information with each other. So once they learn, they can teach others. You know, there a lot of the BIPOC businesses in the community hire BIPOC people.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, you know,
True.
People learn these skills from is from the guy down the street.
Mm-hmm.
He does work on folks' house. He picked your nephew up and he takes him with him. And now your nephew knows things.
Exactly.
And so. And, you know, we've talked to a lot of local employers. They're like, I've trained several people and gotten them this, this, and this. And I can tell you how this, this, and this work. And I'm looking at these black men like, look at this brilliance. And if you look at the records in the paper, you don't exist.
You don't.
You're an invisible hand of the community, but no one knows you there. So how do we uplift that?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get you to the stage where you can, and then you can offer that to others? So some of our trainers in our program are those folks in the community because they know this stuff and they know how to talk to people about it.
Awesome.
And so how do we build those relationships to allow space for them to teach and for people to learn from someone who looks like them and understands where they're coming from and can make those connections?
And then there's that sense of trust.
Exactly.
And that's key.
And that is
that's
huge.
Very, very, very important.
Huge.
Very important. This is awesome. We're going to take another quick break and we will be right back. Again, this is Vibes with Viv on WBCALP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station.
Interested in getting involved with community media? Come by the Boston Neighborhood Network, where we provide media and technology classes, as well as opportunities to produce your own shows. For more information, check us out at bnnmedia.org.
This is WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station.
Did you know you can listen to WBCA from anywhere in the world? To stream local news and music from your computer or smartphone, just go to www.wbcaradio.org.
This is Black History Minute, brought to you by BNN and WBCALP, where we honor prominent Black figures in history. Nina Simone is an extraordinary artist and singer-songwriter who broke barriers of the 1950s music industry, becoming one of the first African-American women to achieve international recognition. Her music contains powerful storytelling as she provides an authentic and complex portrayal of Black lives. She wrote songs like To Be Young, Gifted and Black, and For Women, which amplified the voices of marginalized communities and shed light upon racial injustices that occurred during her time. For more information on Black excellence, visit bnnmedia.org and tune into WBCALP 102.9 FM, Boston's community radio station.
And welcome back to Vibes with Viv on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. And again, we're here with Tashia Green Williams, who is the Deputy Director of Action for Equity, and Ashe Brooks Cook, who is the Assistant Director of the Green Equity Partnership. Wow. I'm ready to just shout it from the highest hills here in Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan.
Feel free.
You know, I'm going to be sharing this information with a lot of my networks, try to get this information out here. I personally know of some people, and I particularly know of people who, gentlemen who, I might know of some women, but I'm thinking specifically of some gentlemen who I know who are in the community who are doing this kind of work that might be interested. And I don't know why I didn't think of this before. I just needed to hear. I needed to get excited, get this exciting information from you guys so that I can help in getting the word out.
Thank you.
So, again, you have a class that's going to be starting at the end of March. Is that correct?
Yes.
Two classes.
The HVAC and the Hurriz Raider Trainer.
And these are going to be going on for about 5 to 6 months. And these are going to be some hands-on training on your site, which is where?
420 Washington Street in Dorchester.
In Dorchester. And then there's also going to be some online instructions.
Yes.
Correct? And in addition, there's going to be some on-the-job trainings at various work sites.
That's right.
Is that correct? Yes. Okay.
And also, I want to point out that we are doing two cohorts. So, two cycles. So, there'll be one cycle in March. But if that's too soon, then we'll have another cycle in another 6 months. So, people can also join during that time as well.
Okay. And then, so then after you do this 5 to 6 months of this training, then what happens?
So, that depends. Now, if the person is pass their test, because this is all the decarbonization work is certification based.
Okay.
So the point is to get the skills in order to be able to do the work and to pass the certification test, because without the certification passing the certification test, you cannot work in the industry.
Okay.
And so in order to make that happen, we have created some foundation skills that people will begin with, and I'll pass it to Ashay to talk about that.
Yeah, so we're going to work on sort of the foundation skills, which would include the math and geometry review, the Excel review, test-taking skills, being able to read manuals, working on the communication skills, the report writing skills, and then also the general workforce readiness, with a focus on work environment in the green sector and blueprint reading. In addition, we'll be doing the EPA 608 Universal. They'll be doing the OSHA 10. And we're going to be also looking at other certifications, such as the Green Project Manager. So the Green Project Manager I kind of touched on, and that's sort of a step up from the Hirsch Rader trainee. And they will be able to have more of a knowledge of the importance of the decarbonization and what does that look like within a sort of the building implementation.
Okay.
And the other piece, and the thing about the two tracks. So if you do decide to take the Hirsch Rader track, which is the energy auditor, this position is now recently been put into the code, the building code. And so because our city has an ordinance called BERDO, which is Building Energy Redesign. Don't get me to saying it wrong. I don't have it in front of me, but it's a policy that it's an ordinance that states that the buildings in the city larger than 6 units and a certain amount of square feet have to meet energy efficiency by there's 2025 goals, 2030 goals, and 2050 goals.
Wow.
And because of these goals and decarbonization, they have written in this Hirsch Rader position as a part of the law that says what you need to actually do a project.
Okay.
And so this position is actually one of the ones that we know is really growing, and now that it's codified in the law, it's required.
Okay.
And so we are getting people certification in the Hirsch Rader. And that's a specific test. That's a specific track. So for folks interested in the Hirsch Rader, it would be the OSHA 10, the EPA, and the Hirsch Rader Energy Auditor certification as well. And Ashay, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I believe that is the case.
So in order for someone to be interested in that track, would they need to be have certification in one of the other? Not necessarily.
No. We're not requiring people to come with any certification.
What kind of background would they need to have?
So, funny story about this. When we first got into this, we got into this around the Hirsch Rader trainee. The Hirsch Rader has existed and it's been predominantly white industry, male-led industry. The first person we actually recruited to be a Hirsch Rader trainee was a Black woman out of healthcare.
Wow. Okay.
Who had an interest in green and was looking to go into an HVAC program because of their interest in green and environment and built environment. And we happened to come across them through a relationship that we had with some other organizations. And this was the person who is one of our first Hirsch Rader trainees.
Wow.
And so this thing about Ashay mentioning about transferable skills and people not knowing, people have a lot of skills. This Green Project lead, I think of somebody who is a medical administrator, you know, is used to checking off and making sure folks are following the rules, you know, has this procedures, knows how to move them, knows about, you know, monies, measure, it's all type of skills people have that lead into other jobs, but we're not taught that. We're taught that once you go into a sector, you stay there forever.
Yes, yes.
And so really thinking about, is this an interest for someone? You know, as the employer, is this an interest for you and your employees? Mm-hmm. So not necessarily does someone have to have skills in doing construction to go into this, but we're starting with those folks because those are who we have relationships with.
Okay. Okay. So for those who are listening and they would like to get information, where might they be able to, where can they go?
Well, if people are looking to learn more, you can learn more at action4equity.org. So that's action, A-C-T-I-O-N, 4, equity, EQUITY.org. We are also on Facebook and Instagram.
So for those who would like more information about the Green Equity Partnership, again, you can go to
actionforequity.org. That's actionforequity.org. Or you can check us out on Facebook or Instagram.
Fantastic. Well, this has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation. Again, you have been listening to Tashia Green-Williams, who is the Deputy Director of Action for Equity, and Mr. Ashe Brooks-Cook, who is the Co-Director of the Green Equity Partnership. I hope that you have gotten as excited as I have, and I hope that people will be sharing this information with others. I know I will be. I've already, just in my mind, have just thought of several people who I plan to share this information with. And again, you were listening to Vibes with Viv on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. And I thank you both for being here. This was wonderful.
Thank you for having us. Yeah. We really appreciate it and appreciate this opportunity to bring this to the community. And thank you for everything that you do in the community.
Yes.
We appreciate you as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Take care.
All right.